The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
Our guests on the Shewa just love Fina Cabrillo Grillo, an elegant wine worthy of amazing women. Many thanks to What's in Your Glass, brought to you by M&Z Wines. Welcome to the She Word, conversations that women rarely have but really should. We kicked off season 5 and show 2 with women survivors of domestic violence. And that show has had an incredible response that touched so many of you. And thank you to every single one of you that not only got in touch with the show, but stopped all of us that were on that show in the streets and told us how important that show was to you. The fact of the matter is, 1 in 3 women in Malta will experience intimate partner violence or domestic violence. So if that show isn't relevant to you personally, it certainly is relevant to someone that you know and you love. So I want to say a massive thank you once again to Sephora, to Elaine, and also to Rachel, who appeared on that show. Go see it. It's an incredibly powerful show. But the statistics go on to say that women and safety is a really shocking area that we need to talk about. In addition to the statistics I just shared, a global report relating to online violence against women and girls from 2018 onwards showed an increase ranging from 16% to 58%. Since 2018, the most common forms of online violence include misinformation and defamation, 67%, cyber harassment, 66%, and hate speech, 65%, with 1 in 10 young women and girls experiencing online violence almost daily, and 40% of women being harassed at least once a month. And tragically, globally, as many as 38% of all murders of women are committed by intimate partners. Here in Malta, 48 women were murdered in the past 22 years, 32 of those being femicides, 9 in the past 5 years. And unfortunately, we have a system that isn't providing adequate protection, and a society where reported violence is increasing, not decreasing. This is a massive topic, and it's a topic that you've been asking us to delve into. But we're kicking off the show looking at the topic as an overall, and we'll be digging deeper into each of these areas in the future. I am extremely honoured and delighted to have 3 ladies at this table who are absolute experts in these fields. Lorleen Farrugia, thank you so much for being with us today. You are a child rights and child protection researcher and consultant. You have many years' experience in researching online safety, and you join us as an expert in both how we should be guiding our children, but also as how we as women can stay safe online. I'm going to let you fill in the details in a second. But Lorleen, thank you so much for being here. And when I said we were doing a show about safety, immediately I had so many people saying to me, you have to have Lorleen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
You are so, so, so welcome. I'm really honoured that you're here. And like I say, we'll fill in the details in a second. Professor Marceline Naudi, thank you so much for being at this table. You're a social worker by profession and a senior lecturer within the Department of Gender Studies at the University of Malta. You teach and supervise student research on gender issues, violence against women, and other anti-oppressive issues. You're active on issues of gender equality and violence against women, including femicide, and led various EU-funded research projects in Malta, and currently involved in a project relating to femicide.
Yes, all of those things.
Brilliant. Yes. I love you. You are such a big character. And I'm very delighted to have you here. Slightly nervous as well, because you have... Yes, you see this look. What an amazing woman. I'm excited. I'm going to let you fill in the details in just a second. But thank you, Marceline, for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me.
You are so, so welcome at this table. Dr. Clarissa Samuts-Sherry, this is not the first time you sat at this table with me, and I'm really delighted to have you again, because like these other two ladies, as soon as I said women in safety, all of our friends of the She World were pinging your name and saying you have to have Clarissa on this show. You are a university senior lecturer in the Department of Child and Family Studies, counseling psychologist and family therapist, and you've joined as an expert relating to the topic on domestic violence and the impact that it can have on families as well as women. And I'm so delighted that you're here, and I'm going to stick with you. And first of all, say thank you very much. You were on the show.
Thank you.
Women Surviving Christmas, which yes. was such a powerful show. But I just want to ask you, is there anything I missed out when I introduced you?
I think I'd like to say something about my passion around children and domestic violence. So I've kind of dedicated 7 years of my life doing my PhD, you know, focusing on children and domestic violence. So I'd like to talk about that maybe at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think we rightly so, when I sat down for the show Women Survivors of Domestic Violence, Elaine was very specific and talking about what domestic violence is versus intimate partner violence and the impact of domestic violence or aggression or abuse to children, and then the knock-on effect of what that will have to a child when they become an adult is incredibly important. And we talked about this a lot on that show about tolerance and what we will tolerate because what we've seen. So that is a very, very, very key point, and we'll definitely include that.
Keep your self-care journey on track in just a few clicks with Myoka Spas. Whether for a moment of disconnection, a complete body-mind reset, or a bonding time together, book online stress-free at myoka.com or use the new Myoka app. Complimentary spa facilities on every visit.
Laleen!
Hello!
I introduced you first. We're coming around the table. I'm so glad that you're here. We've actually bumped into each other many years ago in another life, but you're here talking about and kind of online safety. As I said, this is a massive topic, and we'll dive into each of these areas in the future in more detail. But did I miss any details out about yourself?
Well, I'm also a university lecturer at the Department of Psychology, and I've been doing work in this space of online safety for several years. I did my PhD in this field as well, particularly focusing on children's sense making of online risks. So that was very interesting to look into what sometimes we take for granted about online safety and thinking that maybe children have the same understanding as we do, when in fact they are looking at the world from their perspective, and we need to listen more to that perspective because it gives us a lot of insights that we might be missing.
Yeah. And I think there's also certainly in a recent keynote speech, I discovered that we aren't as safe online as we'd like to think that we are. And I think that's something I'm looking forward to exploring, is just kind of shining a light onto areas that we as women and families need to be much more aware of. Hello there.
Hello.
Marceline, have I missed out anything about yourself in the introduction? Because you, when I asked you how long have you been involved in women and women's safety and violence against women, you said 200 years.
Roughly.
I like you a lot.
So I am Professor Marceline Audi, and I am a member of the Department of Gender and Sexualities. And I supervise students, doctoral, master's, BA research. On gender and sexualities and violence against women in particular, and LGBTIQ also in particular. So these are all areas that I've worked in. And yes, I have I've done EU-funded research in Malta and elsewhere, actually. on femicide. But that project ended again, because I'm not good at updating
not
things,
good
you understand.
No, yes, fine,
no. But that project ended. But we still have people that when, even when there's a femicide, they say things like, oh, she kept him away from the children. She wouldn't do that to me. I'm telling you, she wouldn't do that to me. Or if there is a rape, or if they're thinking, oh, what did she think? What did she think? She could go and get drunk like that and then everything would be okay. What does she think? The fact that we still have these narratives which play on our social media.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Means precisely that these stereotypes are still there and they're still doing their job of keeping women in their place, which is, of course, in the kitchen, in the bedroom.
Wow. Okay, so this is a massive, massive drop on the first 5 minutes of the show.
Sorry.
I think we have someone with I have no doubt, because your ladies are all experts in your field, but I also believe, having sat with you for a few minutes, that you have very strong opinions about what you do because it surrounds safety and it surrounds women. What you've just said about the stereotypes is phenomenal. And I absolutely, I'm just going to take the script and throw it out the window right now. But we will come to that. But before we get there, I do want to just create some definitions, because we're coming at this topic from different angles of women and safety. And so I want to start off by asking you, and this is really from a genuinely naive point of view. When I looked into your outdated LinkedIn profile, you are a specialist in areas of gender violence and femicide. What is gender-based violence and femicide, so that we're utterly clear what we're talking about?
Gender-based violence is violence that is perpetrated against somebody because of their gender. Now, that might be their gender as in, well, their gender, basically, whether it is their gender because they identify as a woman, regardless of whether they're a cis woman or a trans woman, or indeed a trans man. So it would be against their gender. Mainly, we're talking about gender-based violence against women. So if we're talking about violence against women, and then we're talking about gender-based violence against women, okay, then that's the same thing.
Okay,
then that's the same. Violence against women, gender-based violence against women. Domestic violence is mainly against women. I know, sorry, you didn't ask me for domestic violence.
No, no, I'm going to let Clarissa.
She can.
Okay, I love that. Clarissa's like, you can have the floor with that one. Yep, okay,
and,
so domestic
violence. You can add to it, obviously. Domestic violence, sorry, what I was going to say was domestic violence is mainly perpetrated against women. Okay,
yep.
So women are mainly the victims of domestic violence. Not only, but mainly by far.
Gotcha.
Mainly by far. So I'm going to go back to gender-based violence and violence against women. What we say is that violence that is perpetrated against women or people because of their gender, or that affects women or people because of their gender, disproportionately. Disproportionately. So we're saying lots of women, very few men. Okay?
Okay.
Or
okay.
Lots of women and other genders. Okay, so
and
disproportionately.
Exactly. And not to be and to be very clear about this, and not to exclude men, because men are also victims of domestic violence and intimate partner violence. But because this is the she word, because this has been mentioned to me several times, because this is the she word, we are coming at this from the viewpoint of safety for women.
Yes.
And we are not discounting the fact that men are also have issues and can be victims of violence and abuse as well.
Yeah.
So before we come to Clarissa in just a second, just another question for you. Femicide.
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference between femicide and
the murder of a woman?
The murder of a woman. Exactly, because this is a genuine question from me.
Yes. Okay, well, I mean, I would start by saying that, again, there are very few murders of women that are not femicides, but there are some. Generally, when we're talking about femicide, we're talking about intimate partner femicide, so where there has been intimate partner violence,
okay,
and that ends in a femicide. We're talking about domestic violence femicide, so also we've had a couple of cases. We've had a man who killed his mother and his sister. Those were femicides. We had another man who killed his mother and his aunt. That was also a femicide. But of course, mainly it's the intimate partner femicides. And then, of course, femicides are also where you have stranger sexual assault, rape, and okay. murder. So again, we also had one of those a few years ago,
as
you will recall. So all of those would be femicides. So femicide would be the killing of a woman because she is a woman. Okay.
There you go. Gotcha. Brilliant. Thank you so much for that. That clears up a lot for me. What's brilliant is that you also mentioned domestic violence and intimate partner violence. And I think this is really important. Mm-hmm. And I'm coming across to you, Clarissa. We talked about this in that second show and we talked about the difference in the terms. And I'd really like you to clarify those again.
Between
intimate partner violence, domestic abuse, domestic violence, because we hear these terms used a lot.
Yes. Well, basically, I think the main theme across all those terms is the pattern of coercion and control. So there is clearly one partner having these coercive and threatening behaviors. Maybe if we can speak in this way, so that kind of I make you do the things that I want you to make. You know, to do. So, for example, I use physical abuse, I use emotional abuse or psychological abuse, I use financial abuse, sexual abuse to make you do what I want you to do. And this can happen in different ways. And it can happen with things that I don't do as well. So, for example, if I threaten you, so I won't perhaps, you know, I threaten you by showing you the gun, but I don't really threaten you in the sense by pointing the gun, you know, that's also a form of abuse.
Absolutely. Intimidation.
Yes, intimidation, exactly.
So
the point is that there is power and control over a person and there's coercion and control.
Excellent. But domestic abuse or domestic violence differ. I know, I remember Elaine saying that really she didn't like the term abuse because any of what you've mentioned is violent.
Yes.
It involves violence. And what we're looking at is domestic violence isn't necessarily the partner. It could be the parent, the brother, the sister. So that's just in a domestic context.
Yes.
It's not necessarily
intimate,
the husband or the wife.
Yes, intimate is when there is a relationship between...
Gotcha.
You know, so for example, child-to-parent violence or more... In adolescent parent violence is part of domestic violence, but intimate partner violence is more because of the relationship.
One of the reasons that I wanted you ladies to explain those terminologies, and Laureen, we're coming to you in just a second, is because I think, and it sounds like we started off the show quite technical and we've gotten away from the reality. But the reason I say that is because if you're in a home and you're being coerced and intimidated, you might say, well, nobody hit me, so it's not violence.
No.
But in actual fact,
it is. Violence.
It's inappropriate behavior, whether it comes from a brother, a sister, a partner, a parent. It should not be tolerated. And I think that's why we're just defining that, to make sure that we all know the scope of everything that we're talking about, which is where I'm coming to Laureen. Now, I mentioned at the beginning when we went through the statistics here, I was really blown away. I was blown away that 1 in 10 young women and girls are going to be abused online every single day. And this is, to me, this is just absolutely abhorrent. But what scared me even more is that the statistics show a rise from 16% of women to 58% of women from 2018. Well, this is a huge increase. Now, these are global statistics. They're not necessarily specific to Malta. But I want to ask you, because this is all part of this conversation, because a lot of what we're talking about is not in the home necessarily. It's online, which is, I think, again, we don't necessarily believe that or see that as intimidation and violence, but it certainly is. So, Laureen, what is online abuse? Let's just use that term for a second. What should we not accept?
Okay. Well, there are many things that can count as online abuse and online harassment. And I think we can start a bit by thinking about the online space has now become a space where we're also living our lives. So in the conversation before the show, we were talking about how the internet didn't exist in
200 years ago.
200 years ago, yeah.
You're making me look old now, Lolling. That's not fair.
Well, I didn't mention any names.
No, you didn't. That's true.
And obviously, what we're seeing now is that all the dynamics that we find in the lives that we live are also being played online as well. So that also goes for online abuse. And when we speak of online abuse, it can be several things. It can be forms of cyberbullying, for instance. The statistics you mentioned, we also have statistics about Maltese children. And we see that increasing as well.
I'm going to stop you for a second. Okay. And I'll let you continue because you said cyberbullying. Yes. And I'm like, hang on a second, Trudes, do you know what cyberbullying is? So before we go delve into the details, what's cyberbullying?
Or let's see. Okay, it can be people commenting about each other online. So you post a photo and someone is posting rude comments as a reply, or perhaps they have a picture of you and they make fun of you in some spaces. There's pictures that are shared or pictures that are
like
edited.
You should kill yourself.
Comments such as that, but also any negative comments. Sometimes you can also see them in various spaces, not necessarily on social media, but sometimes even someone commenting on a newspaper article and people gotcha. React to that individual very negatively. That is also a form of cyberbullying.
Okay.
And it happens when it comes to sometimes it's being referred to as drama, you know, sometimes to downplay it. But irrespective of where it happens, that kind of behavior can be considered as cyberbullying.
Okay, so thank you, because I just wanted to make sure that I was thinking of the right thing. So it could be that even if I was to put something up on Instagram, I put up a post, a photo of me, and somebody makes a really derogatory comment about
exactly.
it. And we know how algorithms work.
Exactly.
So once there's one comment, somebody else is going, it's going to bring it to the attention of somebody else who might be inclined to make yes. that. And that's cyberbullying.
And it's not just the algorithms then. There's also a particular dynamic that when we're online, we don't see the reactions of the other person. So you might really get annoyed and angry about that comment, but the person writing will never see that.
Yeah.
And of course, this disinhibition effect happens a lot because we think that whatever we do online is not going to have an effect in real life, when in reality it does have an effect on how we think, how we react. So that kind of disinhibition then fuels others to and also the non-consequence. So if you write something and nothing happens, then it's okay to do it because nothing will happen.
Okay. And you were mentioning about this position of cyberbullying in Malta, and I rudely interrupted you, but I just wanted to make sure that I didn't forget to ask. So how is that playing out in Malta?
Yes. So when we one of the things I do, I forgot to mention, is I'm also part of a European research network that studies children, young people, and online behaviors, the EU Kids Online Network. And every couple of years, we carry out a survey about online behaviors. And this is something that we've seen, that the children and young people saying that they have experienced some form of bullying, whether online or offline, but we also have the specifics for bullying as well, is also a bit on the increase. And we also have reports increasing of people saying that, yes, I have bullied someone in the past, or I have cyberbullied someone. So we also see that being on the increase as well.
So is there, before we go on to this big question that I'm going to throw on the table and then sit back and let you ladies disseminate, is there any other kind of threat to online safety? Is there, when we're talking about being safe online as women and as families, is there anything else that we need to be thinking about?
Yes, of course. We can think of our privacy, identity theft. There are so many things related to online safety. We could also be thinking of at the moment, we are looking at the AI and what AI is going is creating in terms of when it comes to online safety and how to AI generated images or AI generated videos, for instance. Those can also be threats to online safety.
Wow.
And well, there's a lot. You can think of specific images, posts that can be related to that as well. So there's, when we speak of online safety, we're opening a Pandora's box.
What I want to do is come out of today with some real practical applications of how we can be safer as women. Now, just sitting here, now we're 15 minutes into the show, and not only have I just decided that you guys are absolute superheroes, but also I'm now understanding that this topic of safety is so huge. Mm. I mean, the topic is so massive, and that's why I said we're going to open with this discussion, and then I'm going to ask you guys to all come back and have your own shows. But because it is huge and it is massive, and just the idea of safety online just is just breaks down into so many areas. But one thing I think that perhaps as I'm talking to you, I'm appreciating is that online safety for younger women is potentially, because there's so many different areas, potentially more of an issue, because maybe we are used to seeing badly airbrushed pictures, but now that doesn't exist. With AI, that doesn't exist. Everything is almost perfect. And we have young women growing up who've never known a world without it.
Yes.
And I think that's something that we'll touch on. So I'm going to throw this big question into the here, and I'm just going to let you guys answer it however you want to. And that is, in all of these areas, in femicide, in and gender-based violence, in domestic violence, in intimate partner violence, and also in online safety and online aggression and abuse, we're seeing one consistent issue, and that either more instances are being reported or there are more instances. And my question to you is, are these topics, is women's safety being more and more compromised? Are we less safe than we used to be, or are we just seeing more reports?
Well, I would start by saying that there is greater awareness. There is greater general awareness. So things that were considered actions, behaviours that were considered just, you know, what do you want to do? It's just like that. Are now being recognized and acknowledged as not acceptable and therefore reportable. So definitely I would say that there is greater awareness. I mean, I'm known generally as the one who says, I'll say it to Maltese and then I'll translate it, I hate to bite. I'm tired and fed up of saying the same thing year after year, decade after decade, in relation to violence against women, domestic violence, intimate partner violence, etc. However, I have to say that, yes, there is definitely greater awareness of what constitutes abuse, violence and abuse. And there is, therefore, more people who are ready to say, hey, you know, this is not acceptable. I will not take this. And therefore, there are more people who report. And that is excellent. That is absolutely excellent. And we need to keep that going. So definitely, yes, I'd say there is more reporting. And the figures that we have, of course, are mainly reporting figures. We have administrative data. We don't actually have research data. Not.
We do.
Now from the NSO one.
No. Yeah, we do. So to continue from where Marceline was saying, so I do agree that there is more reporting, and even in general, there's under-reporting.
Yes,
so, yes of yes, course. Yes. So it hasn't necessarily gotten worse, but it hasn't gotten better.
No, it hasn't gotten better. I think there's more that needs to be done in the sense. Recently, well, 2022, we conducted, through the Commission on Gender-Based Violence, we conducted a study where we took a, a program that had shown has shown evidence in the United States and across other countries that actually, if you run it in school, so through PSCD lessons, it actually helps to diminish intimate partner violence or the effect of intimate partner violence on the children and dating violence.
PSCD,
yes.
Well, this is interesting because this comes back to what Marceline was talking about a little bit earlier on about stereotypes and what we learn, and we're going to come to that in a second.
And it was really interesting to read about how the kids, so we did this with grade 10 students, boys and girls, so grade 10, so form 4, so, you know, almost finishing school. And whilst the children knew quite clearly what is physical abuse, when it came to emotional abuse and psychological abuse, things started to get really murky. So it was difficult for them to actually, you know, accept that a person, you know, sending you tons of messages, checking where you are, is not showing you that he or she cares, but that, you know, that can be abuse. And you know, and that maybe things like stalking can be looked into in a different way. So linking back to what Marceline was saying and the stereotypes and how we as women, I think, are brought up, you know, kind of brought up into protecting relationships, taking care of relationships, thinking that, you know, love can solve everything and that you're going to change the person, you know, that was almost already too late because the kids were, some of them were already dating and it was already, they were already doing.
Absolutely.
You know, so we need to start much, much earlier, much, much earlier.
Can I just add something to that?
Yes. I got to keep an eye on you because Lolene is dying to get in there and I have a question as well. But I will just say that what I'm taking away already from this conversation is that we do have this idea of acceptance. And even though the reported domestic violence and intimate partner violence is not necessarily getting worse, that the prevalence, that the actual results, the actual statistics say that it's pretty much the same, we are now seeing that more offences and abuse than we saw before because we're recognising that, as you just said, it's not okay for someone to track you and to stalk you. That's not okay. And the reason I'm pausing is because I'm coming back to you, but I want to just ask Lolene, you said something earlier on that really caught my attention because I had an incident when my citizenship, we waited 18 years for citizenship and Love in Malta, our media partners, were very sweet. They picked up on it and they said, hey, Trudy Kerr got her citizenship at last after 18 years. I got a lot of negative feedback and I sat there and I just like, oh, well, let them. But some of it was pretty crap, actually. Some of it was a bit, well, why should she have that? Bet she paid for it. Did she pay for her passport? No, actually, you know, I didn't. I worked my butt off for 18 years. Why was it important to you? Why should she be allowed? And I'm thinking to myself, and there was a lot of what I would have considered bullying, but you just kind of go, okay, well, no, coming back to what you're saying about what we, our boundaries of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. So are we seeing more, coming back to Marceline, are we seeing more abuse online or are we just saying, actually, that's not okay? Or both?
I think it's a bit of both, because in some cases we're able to say that's not okay. But coming back to what Clarissa was saying, sometimes when it happens to us, we sort of say, oh, I think I know what they meant, or I excuse it, or and it happens from a very young age, even when I'm going to go back to children because I saw it in my research, when they explain specific behaviors, I do this, but I'm safe because I do that. But my friend who does exactly the same thing is not safe in what they're doing. So this kind of way...
Give me an example because I'm trying to follow.
Okay, so for example, if we speak of adding strangers to your profile when we speak with children, when we speak about other people doing, other friends doing that, they clearly react by saying, oh, that's not okay. But then halfway through the conversation, they also say the same thing, but they tell you, ah, but I'm careful because I check who I add, even though they're strangers. So that's not really something you can always do if they're strangers. So there's this kind of positioning ourselves in relation to others as we're okay, we're not at risk. But others, if they do that behavior, they're at risk. Mm-hmm.
This is very, what I was, may I now?
Yes, absolutely. Gorgeous lady.
She's asking permission.
what I was going to add to that, but it also obviously relates to that, which was the bystanders approach to sexual harassment amongst young people. And we ran a program in sixth forms in Malta. So in a church sixth form, mm-hmm. in a private sixth form, and in a state sixth form. And part of the... of what the young people were saying, so these are like 16-year-olds, part of what they were saying was like, you know, if a boy follows you, like, you know, home from school or follows you in the street or whatever, you know, maybe he's lonely, poor thing, you know, maybe he's lonely, you know, like that's okay because like maybe he's a bit lonely. So they had excuses as to why maybe they would be stalked, they would be harassed, they would be touched inappropriately. You know, they had, you know, explanations, you know, acceptable explanations as to why these things would happen. So very much so, very much so. So absolutely, I mean, 16-year-old is definitely, they're too late.
14, these were 14.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But what I also wanted to add to what you were saying, Loreen, was about this, like, you know, if other people do it, it's dangerous, but me, no. I think this is very much a human condition. Yes. It's part of our defense mechanisms. I mean, mm-hmm. I was a smoker for 50 years and now I've stopped smoking. And I always used to say, like, you know, I mean, I'm not one of those people who says, you know, like, oh, my grandfather used to smoke 90 cigarettes a day and he lived till he was 90 years old. Like, you know, I know that smoking is bad for you, but you don't really think it's going to happen to you. You know, you think it's, you know, you see other people ending up with lung cancer or other cancers which are related to smoking, but you don't really, really believe it's going to happen to you. So I think this is
there's a lot of research about risk and the other. It's not me, it's always the other. Exactly.
But this is really interesting, and I'm actually going to jump straight to the last question. I am literally throwing out the script because there's something that I've mentioned on shows before, and it is stuck with me and I cannot get away from it. And it's about, I saw a clip of a man, a comedian actually, who was in the UK talking about rape and that 97% of rapists will never see a day behind bars. And he said at the summary of this talk, and it comes exactly back to what you've both said and what you've also said as well, Clarissa, that not being an abuser or not being somebody who's responsible for this is not enough. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And his phrase was, there's monsters among us and they look just like us. And it's not enough to say that I'm not part of the problem, therefore I am part of the solution. When we do nothing, we might as well not be there. And this is men saying this. And we're talking, this is a man saying this. This is a man calling out other men. And this isn't an attack on men. Well, actually, you know what? He says in this clip, this is an attack on other men. But if we don't do anything, we are part of the problem. We are not the solution. And we're sitting around a table of women. We know this. And he finishes this by saying, if you think that this is not an issue that affects every single woman, go and talk to the women and really sit with them and really ask what they have to put up with every single day. And you'll really find out how deep this issue goes. We know this. I'm sitting at a table with extremely educated and well first women who know what we're talking about. So there's two areas here, and this is why we want to have the he word as well, because I think we need to address the fact that the education, I'm feeling totally dismayed that you, Clarissa, just said 14 years old is not early enough. No. But we have two issues, I think, that we can approach in this show. One is how do we as women make ourselves safer? How do we as women, coming back to what you just said, Marceline, how do we say, okay, that's not okay and I'm not going to put up with it without threatening ourselves? How do we make sure that we are safe online? And also, how do we evangelize to those around us that it's not okay and that we as, if there's nothing changing, if nothing has changed in the last 30 years, if the prevalence, if the statistics are still the same, we are failing in society. We are really seriously failing in society.
Today's show is brought to you with Fina Cabrilla Grillo, a popular wine with our she-worders. Fina's Cabrillo Grillo is known for its elegant floral bouquet, with a fine taste, with sweet and ripe citrusy hints. This wine is a great wine for conversation, deliciously simple, beautiful to drink, and easy to share. 100% Grillo grapes, the oldest in Sicily, Fina Cabrilla Grillo brings experience, age, and beauty together to create the perfect combination, making every conversation worthwhile with a good wine. Many thanks to What's in Your Glass, brought to you by M&Z Wines.
But I'd like to say something which I think you said, and kind of I remembered recently, very recently, I attended the graduation of the men who attended the program Stop Abuse, the one by a Poch, and each one of the men actually gave a little talk, and some of them were not used to giving these talks, you know, kind of like a testimonial.
Sure.
And I felt hopeful. I felt hopeful because these men had done a long program. They had committed to this program. And I want to say this, you know, together with the hopelessness, there are some men, not, you know, these were not 300. It was a small number of men, but that must have meant, I mean, a huge difference to their families, you know.
Yeah.
And I could see that they were moved, they were emotional. It was embarrassing for them. They faced a hall of people, and they talked about how they changed and how they supported each other. So I want to say that as well. And it's important that the people out there know that if it is possible to change, if they want to, it is possible. Like, you know, like we try very hard to lose weight, to stop smoking, to stop drinking, and to stop being abusive.
And maybe we can also add that there is, of course, an NGO called Men Against Violence.
Yes.
In Malta. So for those men who acknowledge that they are not part of the problem in the sense that they do not consider themselves abusers, but they would like to actually do something to be more active rather than be passive, there is actually an organization called Men Against Violence, yes, which they can join, and help did you use the word evangelize to, you know, amongst men, other men, that, you know, hey, it's not cool to, you know.
I love this, and we're going to put that straight up underneath this show right here, whether you're listening to this on Spotify or watching it on YouTube. This Men Against Violence, this is going to be here. So if you're a man watching this show, or if you're a woman watching this show who has an incredible man in her life who would be able to take this up, this is going to be right under here. I've not heard of this before, and this is fantastic. So this is what we can do. We can persuade the men in our lives to be more proactive. We can get them to sign up to Men Against Violence, and we'll come back to that in a second. So let's start thinking about how we as women can be. My goodness, this. I'm just sitting here, and I almost don't even know where to start. But I do want to refer back to something that Marceline said about our boundaries and what we are. You rightly said you know, when I asked if things are getting worse, you said, well, actually, now we're seeing more and more as things that as elements that we shouldn't be accepting. And I'm going to come back to that in the context of gender violence and domestic violence in just a second. But I want to come to you, Lorlene. All right, let's talk about online for a second. Mm-hmm. None of these are in isolation of each other. And we heartbreakingly, when there was the most recent femicide here in Malta, all of these elements were part of that story. And, you know, to the family of Nicolette, you know, our heart goes out to her, to them, and what a terrible situation. But when I was researching this, every single part of what we're talking today about today was there. There was online bullying, there was online harassment, there was also the gender-based violence, the femicide, and of course there was domestic and intimate partner violence as well. So starting with you, Lorlene, how do we as women, let's approach this as women, how do we educate ourselves? How do we, what are the things that we miss? What is the thing that we just don't get?
Or maybe the things that we don't always think about.
Yes.
So sometimes it's, and it becomes quite normal to behave in such a way, like posting things online, I'm going there, or I'm doing this. Starting from there, we don't realize that whatever we post online has a trace. So every time we're putting something online about ourselves, that is our digital footprint. So one thing when I'm talking to my students, I ask them, have you ever Googled yourself to see what comes up when you are looking yourself on the internet? Or you put yourself, your name and surname in a search engine to see what comes up. Are you comfortable with what comes up? Because that is information that is shared with everyone. So I don't have to be a friend on your profile to see that. And then we start thinking of privacy settings. So if I'm happy or not to have all that information publicly available. So it's one thing having all the information there for everyone to see. And then you start thinking, maybe I should put some privacy settings. All the applications that we use have privacy settings where you can decide with whom to share specific information. You can decide not to be on social media, but it's probably very difficult for everyone to not be on social media. Some people do it, and it's quite interesting. Some people also spend some time away from social media and to see how it goes. But obviously, it's very difficult not to be on social media. So how do you start? You decide to use that particular instrument, okay? Am I posting all the time about where I am, what I'm doing, who I'm with? Because that could be information that you're putting out there just because you're enjoying your time. But it could also be information that people are learning about you without you realizing that. And obviously that could be potentially problematic.
Give me an example. Give it to me really hard.
Okay.
Not necessarily, I love the fact that Marceline doesn't know what her LinkedIn profile is. I mean, think sweetness, you beautiful lady, I think you're quite safe on this one because you're not a social media queen. If you sit on social media, and you scroll through, you can see some of our beautiful young influencers in Malta or young people. They want to share all the time where they're at, what they're doing. What is the relevance of that? Give me a real life kind of, okay, there could be somebody who might take that information for why, for what? Not necessarily a hate crime, not necessarily a racism crime.
So let's say this younger woman had a fight with her partner, for instance. And she's out with friends somewhere. Okay. And the partner is angry, for instance. They know where to find her. Or they know that she's not at home, for instance. So they could do something to scare her off.
Okay. Because that information is really available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Clarissa, you're nodding away there.
Yes. That could very easily be an ex-partner who is... who thinks that person shouldn't go out with someone else because she's his. And so he knows what she usually does. And then he can check through Facebook or through Instagram and stories. No, it's incredibly dangerous in that sense. People with mental health illness, people who stalk someone else or thinking that maybe in your case, you said something that maybe they interpret as you have an interest in them and they would, I wouldn't post where I am at running for sure. I wouldn't. Let's say my relationship broke down and I put these cryptic messages that only the partner understands and they are a form of threat.
Wow.
And also, again, in various cases of intimate partner violence, when they are together and everything is lovey-dovey and yes. hunky-dory, they share passwords, they share they share everything. Yes. So then when there's a breakup and when there is a breakup caused by abuse, then the partner still has access to everything. Yes. Yes. So, I mean, again, there is also that issue, which, you know, and you don't want to scare the shit out of everybody and tell them, like, you know, you must never share passwords with your partner and you must never trust your partner or stupid things like that. Because, of course, God forbid that we can't share or trust, people who we love, who we have built relationships or whatever. But we also need to be aware, that's all. Yes. We also need to be aware.
Now, in actual fact, you're making me think of a situation where a friend of mine is going through a divorce situation, divorce and separation, and still has access to a shared calendar and has been able to work out where her ex is, despite the fact that they are no longer in the vicinity.
Exactly.
However, that means they also can see
her.
Of course.
Yes.
And I keep saying, you know, sweetness, that is not cool. You've got to break the tie. But, we always think that we're just in case and just in case. But this is actually quite terrifying. So let's stick with online for a second and then come to how that's then works into these other areas. So what should we do as women? What are the, give me five real basics. I mean, obviously, just as you said, Marceline, we shouldn't be sharing passwords and we shouldn't be giving access to all of our online presence. Is that right?
That's part of it. Obviously, things like setting privacy settings and also varying settings according to the audience. So like I can have some posts that I want to share publicly, but then some posts that I only want to share them with my friends or some close friends. So there are specific settings that you can also set if you want to do that. If we think of Instagram, for instance, you can share something with all your friends or with close friends. There's a specific setting for that.
Sorry, this is my terrified face. Okay, carry on.
What else can we do? So thinking of before posting. So sometimes we just post without thinking, or perhaps we think a lot about what we're going to post, but we're not thinking about who is going to have access to that. So all the information is traceable. So like if we have, sometimes you even recognize a location from knowing a particular spot. So even if you're not saying that you're out, but you recognize a particular spot, it's very easy to identify, especially in Malta where, So also thinking about posting and thinking also about our digital footprint, as I was saying before. So I think it would be a good exercise for women to Google themselves and look at what comes up to identify whether they're comfortable. Usually we say this in a context of a job interview, but not just, when you Google someone, you get access to the information that's out there about them. Okay, so am I comfortable with that information being shared about me? And if not, there are ways and means to even, if you want to delete your data, you have the possibility to do that.
Wow. Clarissa, have you ever Googled yourself?
Yes.
Marceline, have you ever Googled yourself?
Yes.
Am I the only person at table that hasn't Googled? Listen, let me tell you why I haven't Googled myself, because there's an Australian jazz singer who's slightly more famous than I am, and she's every time.
Same name.
Trudy Kerr, yeah. And she's blonde. And we look, and we're exactly the same age. And we look quite similar, yeah. So I always defer to her. Wow, you guys have actually Googled yourself? Oh my word. So this is like number one. What? I've never Googled myself. So this is like one thing that we should definitely go and do. We should go and Google ourselves to see whether we are happy with the information that is represented. That is like one incredible piece of advice.
And if you think about it, like the younger you go online, the bigger your digital footprint is going to be. So we also have to think about sometimes when parents are sharing information about their kids online. That is also part of the kids' digital footprint, which can start at a very young age.
Wow. Yeah, we have talked about that before. We talked about that in the show, Women and Male Gaze, about the fact that anything that you put out there is there, it is there. And there is also, of course, when nobody really likes to talk about it, but there is the dark web that we have to be aware of, that there is a very sinister presence, as there is in real life, out of the internet, but online there is a sinister presence as well, and we just have to be mindful of that. So, okay, so I'm going to, before we move on to these two amazing ladies, I'm going to let you scare me just a little bit more.
Laline, I'm not sure I can do it.
You're so trying not to. Marceline's just like egging you on. She's like, God, scare the shit out of Trudy. But if you're a mother, as we have a lot of mums watching this show, give me some really good advice for mums for the online safety for children. Because I know that you work with children, and it's something we're going to talk about in a second with domestic violence and safety. But give me some advice for that. Is it the same as Googling your child? Or
no, I would say when it comes to children, well, if you Google your child and you find a lot of information, that is also scary. But definitely, especially when it comes to, I'm going to go into another area of child sexual abuse material. I would say as much as possible, avoid putting pictures of your children online.
Yeah.
Obviously, they are cute, they are sweet, but then you, again, are posting them out there and you can have your friends who like your child and have good intentions, so they put likes and smiles and whatever, but then you have other people who are looking for such photos with malicious intentions. So then we go into a different field there of child sexual abuse material. We have to be cautious about that.
So coming back to what you were saying before, is it enough to rack up your privacy settings or so that only your friends can see the photos of your children? Or is it just, you know what, don't do it because you don't know who's going to share it?
Yeah, I would say for children, don't do it. It's better that way.
Wow. Okay. That is really, really good advice. You mentioned before we sat at the show as well, you talked about monitoring what your kids are doing and what your kids get up to. I mean, this is such a massive topic and we're kind of heading off topic a little bit, but we'll come all the way back round. But how do we on earth control what kids are looking at these days?
I don't think it's about control. This is a question I get asked a lot. I think it's about having conversations from day one, from when your child starts using the internet. Getting engaged in what they're doing, trying to understand what they like, what they dislike, what makes them feel okay, what makes them feel not okay. I think this is something that needs to happen very early on. Clarissa was mentioning that some forms of education are happening quite late, and this is something that also happens with the internet. Some parents start getting worried about their children being online when they turn 13 and they want to go on social media. But whatever has happened before that is also something that can have a great impact on the children. So I think the conversations and getting engaged in what children are enjoying, even if it's a game, it's important that the parents speak to the children about what they like about the game. Maybe at a point they will start joining games where there are others present. So they need to learn to recognize that some forms of behavior within the game itself are not okay. Some forms of abusive language are not okay within a game. And this is always within a game, we're saying.
That's incredible.
And I see parents, you know, in my role as family therapist, when they come and say, for example, I'm really worried because my son or my daughter is spending so much time on the internet, like playing games. But this person is, this child is 14, 13. It's already too late.
Yeah.
You would need to have set boundaries and timetabling, like, you know, for example, an agreement that we play these games during the weekend and not during the week when they are still young, you know, and that you play with them. I have played with my son. I'm hopeless, but I play and I know what the games are, and we have the huge television in a part of the living room and not in the bedroom.
Right.
And when he was into role playing games with people, you know, with people, we didn't know who they were, but we were hearing the voices. And, you know, when there was a lot of swearing, we're saying, what's going on? And we kind of, we go actually and listen and say, be careful what's going on, you know? My husband is into these games as well, so he knows exactly. And I think that has really helped. So I would say, together with what Laureline said, you know, be technologically interested.
Mm. You don't have to be an expert.
No, you don't have to be. And the games are really good, actually. No, some of them are really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I admire... you know, the graphics, they're like watching a movie. They're really, really good, you know.
Except that I'm going to pick up on something you just mentioned. You mentioned violence and you mentioned language. And as soon as you said that, I came back to something that Marceline said right at the very beginning, which is about stereotypes. And we're coming all the way back and where we learn stereotypes from. Because even with... You know, we're doing this, I mean, I feel like we're sort of wandering through a whole field of topic of safety, but we keep coming back to various themes. And that idea that you talked about, let's bring it back to there, because you talked about stereotypes, and I see that on online games.
Yes.
And if young kids...
big boobies.
Big boobies, but violence as well, yes. And language.
Yes.
And I fully accept, I'm not a parent, I've said it over and over again, I saw this with a very close friend of mine. We were all out for dinner and her young child was just wanting to run around the restaurant and was full of energy. And I know her and I respect her. And she handed over the tablet as a last resort. But we see it a lot. I saw it the other day. I was out for dinner and you could literally hear games on this tablet from one end of the restaurant to the other. We were sitting at the other end. And I remember sitting there thinking, wow, this is not language that I would have thought would be coming from the game that would be appropriate for a restaurant. Is this where we're getting where do stereotypes come from? Let's go all the way back to that, because we have identified that we need to break the cycle.
All the way back. Before I used to say, from the minute that we're born. But now, of course, people know the sex of the fetus from before they are born, and they already start to treat that fetus differently. So they play different kind of music, they react differently, to the thumping of a little boy as opposed to the thumping of a girl, you know. So they start treating the fetus and then the child when it is born differently, because there's a boy, there's a girl. It's not sort of like new stuff. I mean, years and decades ago, you know, there were experiments done with children with sort of a mummy and a baby dressed in blue in a doctor's waiting room, and she gives the child to somebody waiting there, so she just goes to the toilet and back. And if it's just a child dressed in blue, then they're bouncing it up and down and saying, oh, look at this child, oh, some little boy this is. And if it's a baby dressed in girl, then they keep her quiet and say, oh, what a sweet little princess she is. Oh. So we treat boys and girls differently, and therefore boys and girls learn what it means to be a boy, what it means to be a girl.
So then how does that type into this, how's it so into this topic of safety?
So a boy should go get it. A boy should be active. Okay? A girl should be pretty.
Passive. In 2024?
Well, I'm not going to, you know, go into...
Well, look at the influencers.
And you said, and because that was what I was going to say earlier, but of course I'm not allowed to speak unless I'm asked to speak. earlier, when you were talking about the virtual influencers that are perfect, and I was going to tell you, perfect, what does that mean? What does that mean? Perfect means the look, right, that society is telling us you should look like and that normal people cannot achieve, right? So that is part of it, okay? Women should be in a particular way. Women should do particular things, their behavior, their occupations. And these stereotypes actually limit girls and boys.
And
women
boys, yeah.
And men.
How then, as women, can we be safer? If those stereotypes exist, if that is a society
break
that we're living within.
Break the stereotypes.
But we know that we have to break the stereotypes from, as Clarissa said, from very day one. And what we're dealing with in 2024 is situations where 9 women were killed through femicide in the last 5 years. We want women to be safe. We've got some advice as how to be safer online. But how do we as women, whether it be, let's go for when we're out, and we'll come to the home in a second. But when we're out, you've just mentioned, if a woman is drinking, then there is a particular perception about her. Society says certain things about her. How are we going to be safer as women in those environments? How are we going to be safer as women? What can we do?
This is a very sad question that you asked, Trudy. And it really, again, it makes me very, 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 very sad. Very sad. It makes me very sad because what we should say is, how can we keep those men who are abusers, who are rapists, from raping, from abusing? Right? A woman is entitled to go out. I mean, in the 80s abroad, and in Malta we had one relatively, I don't know, a few years ago, there used to be the Reclaim the Night marches, right? The Reclaim the Night marches, which were about saying, hey, we are entitled to be out at midnight if we choose to be so, without being assaulted. Reclaim the night. We reclaim the night. And there were women's marches through town centres saying, we reclaim the night. Now, when I lived in the UK, I was a smoker. I am now not. But I was a smoker. And sometimes I was up north, as I mentioned earlier, by like 4:30, it was like going dark, right? 4:30 in the afternoon, it starts to go dark. And I lived in a bit of a rough area, and my colleagues at university used to tell me, you don't go out after dark there. And I used to say, if I've run out of cigarettes and it's 5:00 in the afternoon, and it won't get light again till like 8:30 the following morning, like, no way am I going to stay without cigarettes. I will go out. And I would tell myself, I know. Evidence tells us that you are much more likely to be assaulted by someone in your household, someone whom you know, so someone you are intimate with, are related to, or are acquainted to, than by a stranger in the street. I would say to myself, come on, this is fine, right? I can go buy my cigarettes, right? But then I would say, geez, I don't want to be that one in however many it is who is assaulted by the stranger in the street, right? There's always that fear. There is always that fear. And what this does is it controls us. This fear controls us. So I'm not telling people go out and risk being raped, go out and you know, because even the things that you were saying, why can I not show that I was running and I was enjoying myself having a run in Eindhoven? I don't know. I don't run in Eindhoven, if anybody is listening to this, right? But why do I have to limit myself? Mm-hmm. So what we are saying is that in order to be safe, we have to limit everything that we do. No, that's not acceptable. It's not acceptable.
But it is reality.
In fact, when you asked the question, I was thinking, I don't know how to answer that, because it would mean that living in a way that you're constantly looking over your shoulder, seeing whether you're safe or not. I think we have to, as Marceline was saying, we have to change the question and ask a different kind of question.
Why do okay. men think it's okay to hassle, harass, abuse women?
But then, as I mentioned before, we have two parts to this question. And the question is, what can we do as women to be safe? And the second part is, what can we do to encourage men to change their attitude, to change their part, their responsibility? Because I think for so many years, and I mentioned this quote from this guy, for so many years, millennia, women have held the responsibility. Women have said, we are not safe. What do we do to change that? How do we act to make ourselves safer? And you're absolutely right. The onus is not, we are not the ones that are committing the abuse or the violence. So why are we the ones that have to change our behavior? But unfortunately, right now, today in 2024, that is the reality. And the statistics, as you said, Clarissa, have said that nothing is getting better. So my practical question is, we know what we need to do, and I would say that what you just mentioned applies to men as well as women. Men should also go and Google themselves. It's going to be a mass Googling of ourselves. But I'm also asking, yes, we need to change culture, and I have no idea even where to start with that.
Right.
But we also need practical application, because as you say, Clarissa, we are coming to this topic in family environments far too late.
Mm. Well, if I can just say this last bit, I would say in relation to intimate partner violence, domestic violence, then we need to be clear what abuse is, and we need to be able to report. Then, of course, we need services that respond appropriately to our reports. Okay, so in terms of how do we keep ourselves safe, we cannot. Sadly, again, if you were Thomas and Clarissa was, I don't know, I can't think of a male name like Clarissa, but whatever.
Clarence,
right? Then, I mean, you know, when I start building a relationship, it's often difficult at the start of a relationship to actually specifically pinpoint this, the control or whatever, yeah. right? That then leads to coercive behavior and to abuse. But as soon as, so I can't tell you, now you always be careful. I mean, some things are quite obvious. And again, some things we excuse, like, you know, like somebody says, I don't know, oh, don't cut your hair. I really like your hair long. You look so lovely when your hair is long. Don't go cutting your hair. And you think, well, you know, that's my hair. You know, my hair, I want it short. But so there are some things that might indicate. But as soon as you realize that there is abusive behavior, stop. Report, get help. If you want to continue the relationship, get help. There is help available. And so that is one way that we can keep ourselves safe, in that once we recognize that there is abusive behavior, at the start of abusive behavior, then we should do something about it, rather than hope that it will, that the person will change, that we can change them.
Yes. Yeah, because abuse is very subtle. Mm. Very subtle. So in the beginning, you kind of are in a honeymoon period. And well, it's also very difficult to break off a relationship with someone you love. And we excuse the person, we think, we psychologize, we're really good in this, you know, we think it's my fault, or we say, you know, he's going through a stressful time. He's, you know, but everyone goes through a stressful time. And it doesn't mean that it's okay to hit or to be abusive. So for instance, even if someone is provoked, it doesn't mean that it's okay. You know, there are all these things that even before reporting, you know, you speak to the person and say, look, this is not acceptable. This line, it's a line that has been crossed and I'm not happy with it. And I think sometimes we don't do that. Also, I think it's also about, empowering women, helping them build an identity, you know, talking about we talked about this, the mother-daughter relationship, you know, the continual criticism. This is the psychologist coming in, you know. So I think being able to stand your own ground, I think it's really important, because a person should know, no, I'm not going to stand for this, you know, this is not okay.
We said at the beginning that, coming back to the whole topic of abuse and domestic abuse, family abuse in the family and the effects on the children.
Yeah.
And what I'm seeing all the way through this theme, and I think would be my key takeaway, is something that you all have touched on, and that is what the boundaries are and what we've learned is acceptable.
Yes.
And redefining what is acceptable. Because let me tell you, we talked about this in the show, Women Survivors of Domestic Abuse. Women don't go into a domestic abuse situation and say, hey, look, no, that's fine. It's okay for you to act like that. They've learned to accept that behavior.
Yes.
They've learned to accept that behavior through generations,
yes,
of abuse. And that's why this continues on and on and on. And we've talked, and very rightly so, we're talking about trying to break cycles. I think rightly so. I think, you know, I'm going to list a couple of takeaways, and I'm going to ask you guys, because we're sort of heading towards the end of this, and I feel like we could sit here for hours on this. But I want to clarify, there's so many very important things that we've discussed, which we are going to come back to in separate shows and touch on individually. We've talked about, you know, same-sex violence. We've talked about femicide. We've talked about online aggression and violence and safety, and we've talked about domestic violence. But one thing that just does keep coming back to is what we as women are saying it's okay for us to tolerate. Mm. And sometimes, I'm just going to tell you, Clarissa, sometimes we can't see it. Sometimes we need a friend to turn around and say, did you know that's abuse?
Absolutely. Exactly.
And did you know that you shouldn't accept that?
Yeah. Absolutely. When you are in it, it's very difficult to see it. Plus, it's often, as Clarissa said, very subtle. So it starts, you know, this much.
Yeah.
And then it gets bigger. Once this much is accepted, then it's, you know, you accept the next bit, then the next bit. And then suddenly you find yourself here.
Absolutely.
And you think, how the hell did I end up here?
Exactly.
Absolutely. You know?
And then 100%. There's the shame.
Yes.
Wanting to show that you're into this crazy relationship, and how did I get here? You know, and how stupid I am, and I'm not going to talk to my friends about it. And let me keep hush. And I'm worried that he's going to commit suicide. Mm.
But it comes back to what was said right at the very beginning, which ties into what each of you has said, which was that is this situation getting worse, or are we just reporting more instances? And actually, neither. Both and neither. Actually, what we're seeing is that there is an understanding of what abuse and violence and bullying actually is, and calling it out for what it is. And I really think that we as women need to be friends to other women and men, I'm going to keep saying that, and say that is not acceptable. You shouldn't accept that, because we know that once you sow that seed, that cannot be plucked. It's sown.
Yes.
And so if I see somebody intimidating you, not that I think anybody would, but if somebody did, I need to come next to you and say to you, hey, listen, are you okay? Because that's not okay.
Exactly.
And if you're seeing something online, you know, you need to be saying, I saw that comment on your post. Are you okay? Because that's really not cool. Because I think we as women, and with children, you mentioned before, to children, children need to be told. We had this conversation in that show, and I said I learned at a very early age to override my gut and to override my instincts. And somebody needs to come on side to children and say, that's not okay. You need to relearn what you have been taught. And what I'm learning now is that that needs to happen from a very, very young age.
Yes.
So we need to go back to being the village and the community and looking out for each other. That's what I'm going to take away from this show. Sorry, I've just rambled on for a minute. But listening to you, I'm suddenly understanding so many, many more things. I'm going to ask you, and we will, I keep saying this, we're going to revisit this, but I'm going to ask you to leave your closing thoughts. And I'm going to start with you, Laureen. How, as women, can we be safer?
I think what you just said is very important. If we sometimes don't recognize it ourselves, but we have a community around us that can support us and help us identify where the boundaries should be, because sometimes, as we were saying, we widen the boundaries or perhaps excuse some behaviors. I think that's very important. And even when it comes to online, I think sometimes online people refrain from commenting to bullying behaviors, even if when they're bystanders, so they're observing bullying, they refrain from commenting because they fear being a target themselves. Mm-hmm. It's very different than the bystander behavior that we usually talk in psychology. When it comes to online, people are a bit afraid because they say, oh, if I say something, I'm going to be the next target. But probably if you're in the same space as that person, you know the person apart from their social media. So I think saying a word in a separate space, hey, as you said, there's that comment, are you okay? What's going on? Do you need any help? I think that's very important.
I think I went, just as you were saying, two thoughts came to mind, and I'm going to keep reiterating the second thought. But the first was, you know, I'm speaking from personal experience. I saw something going on with a friend of mine. I spoke out to her, my very best friend. I know she won't mind me saying this. I spoke out to her. Sometimes it's incredibly hard to tell someone, actually, you know what you're going through right now is not okay and it's not appropriate and I need to tell you that. And I lost my friendship with her for 8 years. But when the poop hit the fan, she knew that I was the person that she could come back to because mm-hmm. she knew that I risked my friendship to tell her. And I think if you really do care for someone, if you really do love someone, you have to take that risk, because if you knew it and you didn't say it, what kind of friend would you be? But also, you were just talking about that. We do have to also appreciate that men, we hate stereotypes. We hate the labels that we've got, but we cannot deny the fact that men have more power in these situations against other men than women often do. And so if a man sees, please, guys, if you see someone you care about, a sister, a brother, a mother, a daughter or a partner or a friend being bullied
or a person,
you have the ability, and I'm saying a relative or a friend because it brings it a little bit more personal, you as a man have more power than sometimes we do. Take it. Stand up and say something. Clarissa, closing thought. Thank you, Laureen. Thank you. I'm sorry, I'm getting very impassioned here. Clarissa, closing thoughts from you.
Maybe a bit of a cliche, but I would say trust your gut.
Yes.
And do reach out. Do reach out. And then I think do reach out for younger women as well. You know, so that you know the legacy of maybe abuse or will have less of a hold on that person. So do be that person that you're there so that other people can bounce off ideas, or not ideas, experiences, you know, but do trust your gut, because usually it's right.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Closing thought?
Well, I normally introduce myself as an academic and an activist, or on occasion an activist and an academic, depending where I'm introducing myself. So I'm going to go that extra step. So I would say that one of the things we need to do is say and shout, if necessary, no, this is not acceptable. We are not prepared to take this. And we need to get out there and tell the people in authority, no, this is not acceptable and we are not taking this.
I felt the table shake when you said that.
I didn't touch the table.
Ladies, I want to say a huge thank you. And thank you for finishing with that. And I really appreciate you being here. This was a very interesting conversation that took some incredible turns. And I think we need to come back and we need to have this conversation again. But here's to, hopefully, a future of safer women. Cheers.
Cheers.